The minute we decide to get pregnant, we are future planning our family, who our children are going to be. We have this whole story that we create. We can have a lot of expectations. I've watched so many women over so many inflection points over their health journeys, over their fertility journeys, over their pregnancy, birth, motherhood journeys, to feel they did something wrong because it didn't go the way they imagined or hoped or the way somebody told them it should. Stop shitting on ourselves. Every baby has their own story. For me, it's how are we aligning with the truth of that story rather than controlling it. Sometimes we need to evolve our stories. I knew a naturopath who didn't evolve her story, and she got a really severe ear infection. She was so adamant that she not use antibiotics that she got sicker and sicker, and she died.
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you want a baby someday or you've already been on the journey and it hasn't been as easy as you had hoped, I want you to know that you don't have to do it alone. I created Womanhood Wellness for women just like you. Inside of this amazing membership, you have step-by-step doctor-designed blueprints unique to your womanhood type based on the season that you're in. You have access to order your own labs. You have over 22 amazing courses and growing that I have created for you, all about breaking up with birth control, balancing your hormones, preparing your body for pregnancy, optimizing your fertility, and navigating the root causes of infertility. I have support for pregnancy loss, for navigating integrative IVF, for supporting your partner throughout this process, as well as information about libido, which is one of my favorite things to teach about, because when it comes to womanhood, it's all connected. On top of the amazing content and resources, such as being able to order your own supplements and the protocols that I have, all of the step-by-step checklists of exactly what to do within each lesson in a basic, intermediate, and advanced path, I also have amazing support inside of the membership. Every month you get a live Q&A with me. I have monthly masterclasses taught by me and other amazing practitioners. And bi-weekly, we have connection calls where you get to really connect with women and share and feel seen. We have seasonal circles that are unique to the different seasons of womanhood. For example, if you are breaking up with birth control, or you're struggling with libido, or you are trying to conceive, maybe you're going through IVF, or you've had a pregnancy loss, all of these different scenarios require different support. And so these circles put you together with women just like you so that you can really connect and make long-lasting friendships. You'll finally understand your cycle, your labs, your body, your fertility, and you'll feel empowered in your womanhood journey. So if this sounds exciting to you, I encourage you to go to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to sign up and save 20% on your first month. Again, head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20%. I can't wait to see you inside. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for from a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. I'm so excited for today's episode. I will be interviewing Dr. Aviva Ram. She is one of my favorite doctors in the women's health space, and it's crazy to think that the woman who wrote most of the textbooks and books that I learned herbalism and natural medicine from is on our podcast today. There's so much I wanted to ask Dr. Aviva about, but today we talk about the balance between hopes and dreams and desires, and then acceptance along the womanhood journey, whether it's applying to fertility, pregnancy, birth outcomes, or motherhood in general. She's such a wealth of knowledge, and I'm just so excited for you to meet her. A little bit about Dr. Aviva. She's a Yale-trained MD, herbalist, and midwife, and she has been reimagining the way that we do women's health, children's health, and integrative medicine in general. She has a very untraditional path. She actually left college at age 16 to become a midwife and spent years helping women in birth and improving outcomes in that space. She became a mother of four, and once she did that, she decided to go back to medical school and become a medical doctor. She's helped so many patients in her clinical practice, and she's also the best-selling author of over 7 books. She has a beautiful way of blending science with ancient wisdom and is one of the most trusted voices in integrative medicine and especially in women's health. She loves to stand up for what she believes in and speak out when she feels like the system is broken. She has so much strength and conviction and courage and wisdom and intelligence, and I just cannot wait for you to hear what she has to say. So without further ado, let's get started. Okay, Aviva, thank you so much for being here. I am absolutely thrilled. I can't believe it.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, can you just share a little bit about you and who you are and what got you into this work?
Ooh, girl, that's a conversation in and of itself. But yes, a little bit about who I am. I am a mom of four, a grandma mom, who actually got to midwife my grandbabies at home, which is really exciting. Two of them.
So sweet.
And I started out as a home birth midwife. So I was a home birth midwife for over 20 years. And previously to that, had planned to be a physician, but there were like a cool series of events that led me into midwifery. But then I circled back around and actually did my MD. I went to Yale Med School, did my internship in internal medicine and women's health, and did my residency in family medicine with specialties in obstetrics, integrative medicine, and pediatrics. And so I've been practicing continually either as a midwife or physician now for over 40 years, which is crazy to say.
Yeah.
And I've written a lot of books, like 7 or 8 or 9 books or something like that. And, you know, I think what I'm realizing is that my work is kind of an intersection of a number of things. One, it's like, I don't have just one niche. It's not just like menopause or birth or thyroid. It's really the whole arc of a woman's life experience, really from her first period to after her last.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And I think the through line of my work is a number of things, but really it is about first and foremost figuring out what we want and need in our healthcare and making sure that women are able to have access to those resources. So, you know, it might be that somebody actually just feels much more comfortable having their baby in a hospital, or maybe they do need a C-section. And so helping them be as resourced as possible and as confident and safe as possible. It may be that somebody wants to do hormone replacement therapy or they don't. So it's like, what are the options and what's the honest information on how we make those decisions that are best for ourselves? And within that, it's a lot about reclaiming our sovereignty over our bodies, but also our self-knowledge and our self-wisdom, really getting to a deeper level of trust. And then there's all this stuff about what's not going well in conventional Western medicine for women that really kind of set me on this path in the first place.
Oh my gosh, I feel like you're so amazing. And we share very similar passions. You've obviously been doing it a lot longer than me, and you're a teacher of mine in many ways, but I feel very connected to that as well in filling the gaps and what shouldn't be gaps, what should just be a woman's right, you know, in all of these areas. I love
that. And I guess to add to what you were saying when you said I'm a teacher, the ways that I kind of bring my work to the world are through teaching online courses, teaching at events, although more and more these days I'm really doing it through my own platform. And, you know, this is an event, right, together
that we
can celebrate, through my medical practice, my clinical practice. And a lot now is also teaching other practitioners. And then, of course, I write books and I write articles and I have my podcast. So I kind of create this multimedia way of delivering information and support so that women can also find what level they need for their own healthcare and their families, too.
I love that. So today we're going to be talking a lot about balancing hopes and dreams and acceptance and motherhood without feeling like you're failing. But before we do that, I know you've written an adrenal book. Like, how do you do everything that you're doing and be a mom? Because I'm a new mom. I have a 3.5-year-old and a 6-month-old. Yeah. And I feel like it's hard to balance all of that. How do you do that?
Yes. I think we have to honor the ebbs and flows in our life, first of all. But I'm a freak of nature, so don't use me as an example. I mean, I'm like compelled to write. I love to write. I love to create. I love to teach. So for me, the balance in motherhood often was doing that work, right? So I wasn't necessarily, I didn't have a TV for over a decade. Definitely had like close friends and social time, but I was also sometimes the one saying, no, I'm not going to come to that party because I'm working on a chapter, right? So it's kind of like finding where your passion is and making the time for that. But then with little ones, look, there could be months where I was working on a project that I couldn't pick it up because somebody was teething or going through a growth spurt or somebody needed me. The through line was always my midwifery practice and then my clinical medical practice. So that has kind of been pretty steady. But even as a home birth midwife, when I had little ones or I had a baby due, I might have taken months off just to be centered in that. I think, you know, it's kind of about the whole conversation, right? Like finding our passion, but also tempering our expectations and then getting help. Mm-hmm. I was really fortunate when my kids were little that my husband was a school teacher. So he was often home by 4 o'clock a lot of the days of the week. For many years, he had summers off. And so we co-parented that way too, that I took the time to write if I was inspired to write. And we just kind of carved out this balance of supporting each other that way.
I love that. Yeah, I think support is so huge. And me and Morgan, who co-hosts this podcast with me, we both have amazing husbands who are very, you know, involved because I don't know how else we could do it. It would be really hard to not have that support. I love that.
When I was really young, I was a young midwife. I was in my very early 20s and I had a midwifery client who was a psychiatrist, actually. And I just remember her saying, she was from Puerto Rico. And I remember her saying to me, in the U.S., we have this kind of like life is short motto, right? Like life is short, just do it.
Yeah.
And then where she comes from, they have a belief that life is long. And of course, we never know how much time we really have. But when you approach things as life is long, it can take away that urgency that we feel as young moms, like I have to do it and I have to do it all now, or I'm missing out, or there's some kind of FOMO. Really, when you think about life is long and babies and children are only small for a really short time, it kind of helps frame the perspective of what we're trying to do.
Oh my gosh, that's like really hitting in my heart. Also makes me want to cry because I'm in a season like that right now, you know, where I hold my baby sometimes and I rock him to sleep and I'm like, this is all I want to do, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And it's hard because I think I've listened to podcasts of yours too, where you've talked about this, of where this drive for perfectionism or the drive of like always wanting to be going and working comes from. And
yeah,
I think for some of us, it's just in us. For others, it's maybe from, I don't know, how we were taught that we were loved or different things like that, but it's a balance. And
for some people, it's a necessity, right? Like half women are doing it alone. So how do they do the things that are like their dreams to do and accomplish and pursue and then still take care of their kids and get food on the table and show up their day job? So not everyone even has the luxury. And then sometimes we have to take risks on things. And sometimes we have to choose where we're going to make compromises and sacrifices. Like when my husband was in graduate school, he was getting a doctorate in education. He was at a school called Atlanta University, which is a historically Black college. And there were several women who actually had come over from like Tanzania, Zambia, other countries. And we had a woman from Zimbabwe. And these were women who were leaving their 4 and 5 children at home with a sister who, so they could come and get their education because it was that important for them to be able to be income providers or to bring something back to their communities or villages. I met a woman who was from, I think at the time she was from the Diné or Navajo reservation, and there was no medical school anywhere within the vicinity of where she lived. She had to go really far and like live away from her kids. So people also make very big choices. Of, you know, how they're fulfilling either a passion or a necessity in their life.
I know. I feel like single moms, I bow down to them. They, to me, are like incredible. I had a girl I went to naturopathic medical school with who was a single mom going through naturopathic medical school, working 2 or 3 jobs. And I was just like, I feel like I had no reason to ever complain. I'm like, you are a rock star, and it's just crazy. So,
well, we all have our own sufferings, right?
You know?
But yeah, and then like, you know, choosing what sacrifices to make can be really hard. And the other thing is that, and especially for those of us who are kind of doing more attachment parenting, if you will, or this kind of more tribal approach to parenting or village approach to parenting, community approach, however you want to look at it. We're doing it without a tribe, actually.
Right.
We're often doing it without a village. And also it's this kind of social value system is foisted on us. Like if my husband had gone to medical school and I stayed home with the kids. Nobody would ever have said, oh, you couldn't have done, he couldn't have done it without you, right? Mm-hmm. But when I was in med school and he was home with the kids, people were like, oh, you must have the most amazing partner, which I did, but mm-hmm. the you couldn't have done it without him is kind of insulting to all the single moms who do it. And there was a mom who was a couple of years ahead of me in med school who actually did, she had four kids and she was doing it. And
wow.
So yeah, we can feel really guilty for taking the time that we need or want or have to do to create careers or self-development or whatever it is. So
yeah. Oh my gosh, I love it. I love this conversation. So back to the original question, I'm going to explain it again or say it again. Can you kind of speak to what you mean by that for someone who's maybe not sure what you mean? So you said the balance between hopes and goals and dreams and acceptance in motherhood without feeling like we're failing, whether that's in fertility, birth outcomes, motherhood,
yeah,
the emotional load of it. Can you just speak to that?
Absolutely. So if there's anything that I've learned in being a mom and a grandmother, and my oldest is 40 now, my youngest is in her early 30s, and is that we can have a lot of expectations. Like, I think like the minute we decide to get pregnant, right? We don't even know we have a fertility issue or not. The minute we decide to get pregnant, it's like we are future planning our family, who our children are going to be. We have this whole story that we create, right? Mm-hmm. And then certainly when we do become pregnant, like it's almost like the minute people are pregnant, we start coming up with the whole story. We see the future or our imagined future. And then when women come up against bumps in the road, so their fertility isn't, they're not getting pregnant as quickly mm-hmm. as they thought. And then the story and their experience, there's a gap between the story and their experience. And that's where the suffering is, right? Like it's this, the gap between what we expected to happen and what's actually happening. And I think for me, if I can like impart the one piece of wisdom that to me is the most relevant and important and lifelong as a mother, aside from the days are long, but the years are short, is that we have to really be able to be present with what is actually happening. Mm-hmm. Respond to what our fertility journey is. Yes, there can be grief and disappointment, and that's all part of it. And, you know, if we're struggling with our fertility, we might be planning a home birth and then we have a placenta previa or we have multiples or we have, you know, and it's not appropriate for a home birth for you, twins or triplets or whatever. Mm-hmm. We have preeclampsia, we have high blood pressure, whatever it may come that is of no fault of our own and has a lot to do with a lot of different factors, but then we can't have the birth that we thought we were going to have in the way that we thought we were going to have it, or our children have different challenges than we thought our children were going to have. I worked with a mom last year whose baby has horrible eczema. I mean, just like awful, awful eczema. And she was doing everything she could, changing her diet. She was breastfeeding. She was changing her diet. She was using every little, you know, different alternative cream, conventional treatments. And she was beating herself up over the fact that her baby had eczema. Like, was it the C-section? Was it she didn't take a probiotic? Mm-hmm. And when I dug into the story, just like a little bit below the surface, I learned that her husband has horrible eczema. Her husband's mm-hmm. entire family has horrible eczema. And I'm like, okay, let's look at the evidence here. Mm-hmm. First of all, even if that wasn't the case, it doesn't mean you did anything or could have prevented this, but the rationality of it, like it was so emblematic to me of how as women we blame ourselves, even when the evidence is there's nothing else that we could have done. Yeah. So I think having goals is really important, having dreams, having hopes, and aligning ourselves and believing in those. And when I was pregnant with my babies, I never thought anything but that I would have a home birth. And I was really fortunate that I did have home births, but that's not the case for everyone. And I've watched so many women over so many inflection points over their health journeys, over their fertility journeys, over their pregnancy, birth, motherhood journeys, feel like, you know, they did something wrong because it didn't go the way they imagined or hoped or the way somebody told them it should. And I just want us to be able to just take the word should out of our, like I always say this, a midwife taught me this when I was mm-hmm. like a baby midwife, stop shoulding on ourselves.
Yeah.
Stop shutting on ourselves and be more able to know that the resilience and the grace is in over time how we respond to a situation, not were we able to control the outcome and get what we wanted. Because you just can't do that with your kids either. They're going to be who they are, right? So that's a lot. Were there any parts of that question that I missed?
No, that was okay. Amazing. And I don't know how much you know about my story, but Dr. Morgan and I talk about this a lot. But, you know, I planned on getting pregnant naturally. I'm a naturopathic doctor. Infertility for 6 years. We had to do IVF, male factor stuff. And then I planned on 2 home births. Both ended up in a C-section. And I have shared that same testament that the work I did for our infertility journey, it rocked my whole world. Yeah. And I did a lot of internal work and really came to that place of understanding the surrender and the acceptance is the thing that helps with suffering. And I shared this story, I've shared it a couple times on this podcast, that when my home birth turned C-section with my daughter, I remember having this moment because it was like my whole life was unraveling in front of me because I am such a control person. But I remember that I processed through that and got to this place of acceptance so fast, I think because of all the tools that I learned for 6 years during our infertility journey.
Yes.
And that was like a moment that I was really proud of myself. Because I didn't then associate my birth as traumatic or like my power was taken away or anything, even though it ended up in a way I didn't want it to, I still felt empowered because it was that acceptance piece. But that was
you chose it, right? Like ultimately chose it because you needed it and you
had it. And it was just like
so beautiful.
Yeah, the acceptance piece we've talked a lot about, that the suffering is the not accepting what is. But what would you tell a woman, like, as they're starting on this journey, wherever they are listening, whether they're just thinking about, I work a lot with fertility, so there is a lot of that disappointment of, I thought that I'd be pregnant, you know, at this time or in this way. You know, Morgan works a lot with more births. She's been lucky in the sense that she planned 4 home births, has had 4 home births, you know, it has had an easier time getting pregnant, but then motherhood is a little bit more challenging for her than it has been for me. So we all have our things, but what would you say if we're sitting in a circle?
So I say this one thing and I say it over and over and it never isn't true. Every baby has their own story. Oh. Every baby has their own story.
Okay.
And so for me, it's how are we aligning with the truth of that story rather than controlling it. The other thing is that I've had 2 midwifery clients over the years, one from Europe and one from Central America. And the expression is the same. Actually, she's from South America, but the expression is the same, a little different. Every baby comes with a loaf of bread under their arm, or every baby comes with a baguette under their arm. Mm. And to me, those two together, every baby has their own story and every baby comes with a loaf of bread under their arm, meaning they come with a gift and they also come with a little bit of what they need. And I think if we can just really remember that the story isn't just about us, we're doing the best we can with so many different resources, right? And a lot of it also is cards that we were dealt, if you will, right? Genetic cards, predispositions that we have, a lifelong experience of being a woman in a human body in a world with a lot of complex factors, socioeconomic, racism, environmental, trauma that play out in so many different ways. And sometimes those aren't ways that we can undo, unpack, heal, or fix ever or ahead of time. And it's, you know, I think the biggest challenge that I have is educating women about all of the reasons that we do need to be aware and educated and have agency when entering into the medical model, because those things are very real without making it a dichotomy. Because when we make it a dichotomy, then when we do have to enter into that model for any reason, we can really feel very self-judgmental or like we've failed or that we're setting ourselves up for a battle rather than just, again, what is the situation? How can I respond? I do think it's very important to be very honest with our emotions, though. If you're feeling grief, if you're feeling disappointed, if everyone around you who you went to college with now has 2 children and you're still struggling with your fertility 6 years later, I mean, that brings up huge, big, hard feelings. And so having the people that you can talk with about that, not just like, I'm fine, but really having the people, having the tools, whether that's journaling, therapy, medication, whatever works for you to get through, and using the medical tools as needed, I think that's so important to give us permission to access everything that's there for us when we need it and how we want to use it.
I love that. Ah, so good. It's so fun to talk to people with such wisdom, you know, which comes from experience. And it's just so beautiful.
Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey.
So I feel like what I've really struggled with, or what I struggled with on my journey and what I see patients struggling with, is kind of holding both in your hands, where there's this piece where we need to maybe learn some more or know more in the sense of how to be healthier, because we know that those maybe shift outcomes to some extent, or certain things to do, or how much do you test to investigate or pursue, you know, shifting gut health or thyroid or whatever, or in pregnancy, you know, all the different things. And also holding this piece of, and I'm also just accepting what is, because if you, let's say we're someone who had a traditionally very unhealthy lifestyle or body, or maybe your partner has low sperm or something, like there's an actual obstacle that needs to be looked at and addressed. But then there's this acceptance piece, like how do you navigate that? Because I feel like it's both and, but
yeah, it is. So lots of things to talk about there. So I tend to not think about it as an unhealthy lifestyle. First of all, like somebody had kind of an American lifestyle, right? They had the lifestyle that they were taught. And were there things about their nutrition or their exercise, or you know, do they have a thyroid problem? Any of the things, because I mean, look, I see tons. I mean, the women who come to me tend to already be kind of in the sort of sphere that we're in. So most of the women that are coming to me that are struggling, whether it's with fertility or any number of autoimmune conditions, like name it, it's their hormonal problems, menopause challenges. They have been really healthy. They have been living really healthy, and yet they still got the, you know, fill in the blank condition or diagnosis or situation. So yes, I do all the things. When somebody comes to me and they are struggling with any health or medical condition, I always look at what are all the conventional medical things that we need to look at, right? Somebody could have had two or three miscarriages and nobody ever told them that low thyroid or even just significantly elevated thyroid antibodies could be a problem. So I'm going to look at that. I'm going to look at their gut health, particularly if they've had a history of digestive problems or an autoimmune condition. Do they have celiac? Like, what are all the permutations of what we can realistically address that we can turn those stones over and improve? I also look at trauma history. I look at how the relationship is going. And honestly, even with all of that, I mean, I can tell you many, many people who got pregnant after years of struggling with PCOS, or, you know, had a like full-term pregnancy after a couple of miscarriages when we did unpack that their thyroid was a problem, even though that might not have been the cause, but it seemed like it was. But then I've had all the people, we do all the things, and I finally am like, okay, step away from the thermometer, step away from like the cervical mucus testing, step away from the app and go on a vacation. Just you guys go on a vacation, just have sex the old fashioned way, enjoy each other's company. And I've had people get pregnant that way too. Yes, we want to look at male factor fertility if it's a fertility challenge, because half of all fertility challenges are male factor. And so I look at all those pieces. And then within that, I think the kind of the core is we're doing all the things that we can, but not doing it in a kind of frantic, frenzied, like we've got to fix all this, but really coming from a place of acceptance while we're nurturing. And I always look at it as nurturing, like how are we nurturing you or this couple to healthy fertility? How am I nurturing that woman to resolving her PCOS, or how am I nurturing that woman to calming her immune system if she has an autoimmune condition, you know, all the different ways of looking at it. I also look at what I ask. So for me, at some point in my career, I learned two questions, and these two questions form the foundation of my clinical practice. Aside from how are you doing and how are you really, really doing? That's always the first question. The second question is, what do you want? What is important to you? What does healing look like to you? But then the two clinical questions I always ask are, what can I add that this person, that this person's body or emotional self or mental health self needs to be functioning at their optimal level? And what can I remove that might be impacting this person's ability, their innate capacity to heal? And so it might be removing ultra processed food. It might be removing stress. It might be removing screen time for 3 hours before bed. It might be adding a multivitamin. It might be adding some human connection. It might be adding exercise. It might be adding a medication. It might be removing a medication, right? So I look at those two questions and they're really hugely valuable. Like, I can create a whole health plan for someone based on those two questions, basically. Because that will drive me to labs, that will drive me to nutrition, that'll drive me to address gut health, stress, sleep, all the things.
I love that. You sound like a naturopathic doctor. Remove the obstacles to cure and give it what it is. It's amazing. So when it comes to motherhood, like pregnancy, birth outcomes, I feel like fertility and birth are two places where there is a lot of this hopes, dreams, desires, and then it doesn't maybe always go exactly as you imagined. I'm just like, I don't even know how do you do it. Like, how women, I feel like, tie their self-worth sometimes to these outcomes. So how do you, or what would you say to that, either to a person who hasn't gone into it yet to be aware of, or to someone who is going through it? Because we do see that, we've touched on it a little bit, but I do think that women, especially given all of the external pressure, it just feels like, yeah, it's tied to our self-worth. And how do we separate that? I know you mentioned about the baby has their story, they have what they're learning, but is there anything else you would say to that in the self-worth department?
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much that we tie our self-worth to it, it's that our self-worth has been tied to it by our entire like our culture, right? Like, there's so many women now who are choosing not to have children, and they feel often very judged by that choice. So there are a lot of women speaking out about that as an intentional choice. We are judged if we're surrounding ourselves by people who are, you know, and I see this a lot amongst those of us in the natural medicine world. Keep in mind, I was an herbalist, head of the American Herbalist Guild for a decade. I was very deeply involved with naturopathic education at National, at Best Year. I know from personal experience, and also a lot of the people I've surrounded myself with, that if that is your philosophy, that that is the way to be, right? To some extent, that's our dogma or our ideology or the rules that we live by. When our bodies are making different decisions for us, when our path is making a different decision for us, we can often judge ourselves because the story is that this is, these should be the, all the solutions that we ever need. We can feel like our bodies are failing us, but also we're often surrounded by people who are reinforcing that belief system. So we either feel embarrassed when something isn't going that way and we don't tell the other person, like, you know, the numbers of people I've known over the years who have been colleagues, friends, or even patients who were taking a medication for their depression or for their thyroid or for something else, but who, when they got up on a stage to speak and acted like they were curing it naturally, I'm like, this is not healthy for you, but this is also not healthy for all the people in this audience who really need that medication, who are struggling with this. So there's a sort of pretense that often gets maintained. And then I think if we're surrounding ourselves by people who are telling one story, there's often judgment when we go outside of that story. So if you are, you know, someone who is in a all natural mommy circle where, like, you're in a prenatal group and everyone's all about, you know, not having an epidural and not doing this and not doing that and only doing these certain things. Speaking of naturopathic conferences, I was teaching at the I was like Ontario Naturopathic Association. I forget what it was. I was the keynote. Mm-hmm. And when I arrived, there were about 40 or 50 women, mostly in their childbearing ages, waiting to like get my book signed. It was like so lovely and so sweet. And one woman, she came up to me and she started crying. She said she had had a baby. She had an epidural and then she had a C-section and she was actually asked to leave the natural mom group because she had done those as if she had chosen to do those
things. Oh my God.
You know, this is like kind of endemic in
that's very
wellness
toxic.
World. Mm-hmm. It is toxic. And so finding other people to be around who mm-hmm. are not judgmental can be a really big way that we change that narrative. You know, and it's often, I don't think that anything happens to people so that they can learn a lesson. I think we grow naturally when we experience challenges and suffering. It's just, we become more compassionate, we become more empathetic, we become more empathic. Being around people who are not judging us, mm-hmm. but also remembering not to judge ourselves. And that sometimes we need to evolve our stories.
Yeah. I love that. I know.
I knew a naturopath who didn't evolve her story. Mm-hmm. She was someone who was incredibly adamant about people having their babies at home alone with mm-hmm. just their partner, which I've done. I'm not judgmental about that at all. But she spread a lot of negativity about midwives, was encouraging people mm-hmm. to have their bitches and their twins at home. She's not a midwife. And she got a really severe ear infection. I found out about it about a year later when her husband called me. And she was so adamant that she not use antibiotics that she got mm-hmm. sicker and sicker and sicker. And she died.
Wow.
Yeah, she died. She'd left three children. It's a horrible story. But she 100% refused medical care. Like, I think sometimes it's an extreme example, but sometimes mm-hmm. we have to evolve our story to include more.
Yeah.
Oh, and I was going to say, like, I think sometimes when we go through these challenges, it's not that like suffering is a good thing and then we become more compassionate. But sometimes I think when we have held rigid beliefs, sometimes these things really do shake up our universe. Mm-hmm. And not that they're happening because we hold rigid beliefs, but sometimes they do really force us to become more expansive. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? That's what I was
saying. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and I've seen that in my own experience, you know, again, in our fertility journey, I felt like a failure because we found out about my husband's sperm in medical school. And it was like, well, we're going to figure this out. Like, there's always a reason, you know. I remember being very naive, I would say, at that time, optimistic and naive. I mean, I was obviously heartbroken, devastated. And then we were just so determined to figure it out. And I remember I couldn't even say the words IVF. I couldn't even, you know, I was like, well, if we're not able to have kids naturally, like, are we not meant to have kids? You know, like, it was bringing up all of these like existential crises inside of me. And I felt like a failure as a doctor and just all of these things. And so it was a lot of my process of working through that. Like you said,
I get it. I went through a period of time where one of my teenage kids, who's now phenomenally thriving, but at the time she was really, really struggling. And I remember feeling like an imposter mm-hmm. taking care of other people's kids. Like, who am I to say anything? My kid's going through this, like, you know, mm-hmm. all right now. And really like that self-judgment. And I think that we can just become so much more compassionate when we're not judging mm-hmm. ourselves. I was thinking about this morning because I'm very hard on myself. Like, my husband, I'll say something to him and he's like, well, that was kind of hard on me, like about him. And I'm like, well, you should be in my head. Like, if you think I was hard.
Yeah.
But I think that until we're gentler with ourselves, sometimes we're not gentler with other people. Sometimes mm-hmm. we're gentler with other people than we are with ourselves. But how can we let go of the judgment? And, you know, you said something earlier about holding two different things in two different hands. And I can't remember who said this. It might have been Buckminster Fuller, but that true genius is being able to hold even opposing things at the same time and consider both. And not that, you know, getting pregnant naturally, if you will, versus IVF is this oppositional thing. It is mm-hmm. all a continuum. But how can we hold mm-hmm. these different needs? And I think curiosity mm-hmm. and really, you know, as you said, surrender and acceptance in Mama Pathway, which is my online pregnancy, birth, postpartum program, and community, I keep coming back to surrender and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we don't set a vision and we don't set attention and vision board and manifest and do all the things. And at the end of the day, because every child has their own story. Yes. We all have our own story.
I love that. That's the one thing, like you said, holding them both, that really is the lesson I've learned on my path. And I feel like I have learned that more through my own experience and can hold that space for other people. And I do see the judgment that comes from the natural wellness world.
Yes.
And I think just like with everything, like with racism and other things, if you're not a person who experiences it, you don't see it as much.
True.
And when you're the person that's on the receiving end of it, you know, I see posts sometimes on social media about, you know, I also am not a huge fan of just pushing everybody to IVF if we haven't looked at the root cause of what's going on, because I think that's also something broken in our system. And I've worked with patients for over a year where we've done all the things. And it's like we have come.
We've done all the things.
Yeah, it's like we have come to the place where it's like this, like their desire for a baby. And it's like we've done all of these things and that's amazing and beautiful. And like this is the next path and there's no judgment there. And, you know, a lot of people work with me because I've been through IVF. They know that I'm not judgmental in that space. Mm-hmm. And same with having a C-section, you know. Obviously, it wasn't my choice, but I see how beautiful my children are and how I've talked to other women who were so dogmatic and that, like, no, I will have a vaginal birth, where it's created more trauma, I would say, than if, like, maybe the C-section was chosen. And it is, it's like holding both of going up the ladder, right? It's how do we start at these lower rungs, but then also be intelligent enough to say, okay, this is a time when conventional medicine is the better choice, or when this outcome is maybe the safer option or whatever. And I just wish we had more of a society that brought it all. And instead of pinning it against each other, it was just like, these are all of the tools.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think the tricky part is figuring out, where do you make the transition, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, you asked me, do I do all of the things? If I have somebody who is 44 and they are like, they come to me and they've already been doing all the things for 2 years. And I can look at their chart and go, they've changed their diet. They've worked on their gut. And I'm like, okay, so what do you really want right now? And they're like, I want to be holding a baby in my arms in 1 year. I'm like, okay, are you comfortable trying things for 3 months? And then at the end of 3 months, maybe that's when you transition into a different approach. And the thing is, all the things that we do, gut, diet, nutrition, sleep, all the things are still going to be valuable if you do IVF. Mm-hmm. When you are pregnant. So
yep.
I think there's still, it's all got value. I'm really big on not suffering. I'm really big on, I see so many women who come to me and they've spent so much money even before coming to my door. They've done so much hard work. And at some point it's like, if this is causing you suffering and it's causing you so much work, is there another path that is also going to be gentler?
Yeah.
It's like choosing the C-section versus getting to the point where it's an emergency. Sometimes that choosing the path earlier is a little bit more of a gentle path too.
Yeah. I love that. That's so true.
Ladies, listen up. Did you know that stress increases oxidative damage that can damage your eggs and therefore your fertility? This is why it's important to support your eggs no matter where you are along the fertility journey. I personally love Needed. Their egg quality support is amazing. I actually helped design it, so I'm a little biased, but even if I didn't, it's the one I would recommend for my patients and my clients. It's an antioxidant and mitochondrial powerhouse, full of powerful nutrients like L-carnitine, PQQ, ALA, and green tea extract. I love pairing it with Needed's prenatal to get all the vitamins and minerals you need, and their CoQ10. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first subscription order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%.
What would you say to women who are in these places of making these decisions and having this grief or this processing for them to support their nervous system? Because I think for a lot of women, it feels unsafe, probably because of these societal dogmatic things where, you know, it's inherently in us maybe to be like, oh, if I go to the hospital, that's unsafe, or I'll be, you know, fighting somebody because of all these things that have been told to them. I know for me, when I went into the hospital, I had hardly ever been into a hospital. I was a failure to progress. It's like, no wonder I didn't progress once I got to the hospital, because I was so scared, which is so silly, you know. And now looking back, I've learned so much, but it's not silly based on like all of the scary things that I had been told or heard, you know, which
yeah,
sad. So what would you tell a woman in those seasons, whether it's emergency like a birth or on a fertility journey or even in motherhood where things aren't going as she planned or dreamed?
I think it's so important to have the people we trust in our close circle. So whether that is a midwife you really trust, even if you have to go into the hospital to have your baby, even if that midwife doesn't have privileges in that hospital, but she can come with you or be with you or help educate you. It could be a doula. It could be a doctor that you feel really comfortable with. It can be other moms that have walked that path before, you know, in a support group. Support groups can be incredibly, phenomenally helpful. You know, as long as you're in one that's non-judgmental and is going to give you accurate information or just women's lived experience. I think for me, I know generally which things help bring me peace and help bring me calm and help bring me to the nervous system state that I make the best decisions in. And so whatever it is for you, like for me, I had an experience recently where I was really like trying to figure something, you know, you're just trying to get the answer and you're torn and tormented. And I called a girlfriend who happens to be a neighbor. And she said, you want to walk and talk it out? And within 15 minutes of a walk up our road, I was like, oh, I see it. Like, I see what I need to do. I see how to resolve this dilemma. But I was so busy trying to figure it out myself. So I think finding those places, whether it's actually in nature, like literal places, whether that is in prayer, whether that is in meditation, whether it's in journaling, whether it's just watching, you know, reruns of Friends or whatever you thought was funny that takes your mind off of the figuring it out, that can be really helpful. And then if you're in kind of a more urgent situation, you know, I would say two things. One, having the people there that do help us feel calm, but are also our advocates is critically important. And then also knowing that you're making, particularly as mothers, we're going to make the decision that in that moment feels most protective of our baby. And if that means at the end of the day, you have a C-section and then, you know, 3 months down the road, you're like, I probably didn't need that. Well, you did need that right then because you needed to make that best decision for your baby right that moment. And with whatever information you were given, clearly you thought that was the best information. And even if you feel completely disempowered by the experience, you have to give yourself grace, knowing that you allowed yourself to do whatever, you know, you allowed yourself to say, do what you need to do to me to protect my baby, because that's what you thought based on the information that you were told and had was the best thing to do. So we have got to give ourselves grace that truly, I think Maya Angelou said it, and I'm going to paraphrase it and not do it well, but, you know, we do what we can do with the information that we have at the time. And when we know better, we do better. And I wouldn't even say better, when we know differently or when we have more evolved information or when we're not in an emergency or urgent situation. Somebody's telling you, if you don't do this, you're never going to get pregnant. If you don't do this, you're, you know, your baby's going to have a problem. We surrender to those moments and we give ourselves grace and gratitude. You know, like you said, you're so proud of yourself for what you did. I think we have to find that.
Yeah.
And even if we feel like we've been victimized, traumatized, whatever it is, even that happened because you were trying to be the best mom in the moment that you could be for your baby.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love what you said at the beginning too about how all of our babies have their own stories. Cause I actually did a meditation and connected with my baby when I wasn't going into labor. I went past almost 42 weeks with both my babies. And I finally accepted. I was like, you know what? However you need to come into the world, I finally accept, you know, if it's a C-section or whatever, like I accept it. It was that night that I went into labor.
Yes, I've heard that since. Yet. Somebody has, I have a, it's almost like a little prescription I give, if you will. And it first kind of crossed my path when my midwifery partner back 38 years ago was pregnant with her second baby when we were friends and after her first baby, but with her first baby, she was actually a nurse. She was a nurse in a birthing center.
Oh my gosh.
And she felt so much pressure to have her baby naturally and at home. Then she went 3 weeks overdue. You know, her doctor was very supportive. They were pretty sure about the dates, but maybe there was a week fudging. I'm not recommending going 3 weeks overdue. I'm just telling you the story. Yeah. And she was going to be induced and she really didn't want to be because she felt all this pressure to do it naturally. Right? She's a nurse in a birthing center. And that night she wrote a letter to her baby and she said, whatever you need, you know, she's like, I really want you to be born. vaginally and naturally and without intervention. But if your story is different, I don't think she said your story, but I say story. But if, you know, the path is different, then I surrender. And she too went into labor and had her baby by morning. And so this is now something that it's almost just become part of what I do around fertility journeys. I have a mama I know who's going in for a prenatal test today that she's really nervous about. I'm like, she's like, how do I manage the anxiety? I'm just talk to the baby. Talk to the baby on the way. Keep talking to the baby. Let the baby know everything's okay. You know, like keep, can really help.
I know. I know. Again, like for anyone who's listening, who hasn't listened to my past things, not that I'm like saying, oh, I've mastered all this, because I haven't. I'm still always in the process. I just know from my infertility journey, we learned so much. But when we went in for the C-section with my daughter, I remember when we finally made that decision, it was like, it was extra stressful, I think, because we know so much, you know, as practitioners. And I remember being wheeled and they're like, okay, now we're putting in your IV antibiotic, blah, blah. And I'm like being wheeled into the OR, and it was really scary, you know, being under anesthesia and like all these things. But I told my daughter, I remember this so distinctly. I was like, these are your birth angels. Cause there were like 30 people in the room. It felt like there was, all I could see was like up, and there were just people flittering around. And I was so nervous cause my like breathing wasn't very good because the anesthesia was kind of too much. And but I just kept calming her down because I was like, these are your birth angels. These are your birth angels. They're all here to help you come, you know. And I was like calming my, like trying to calm my nervous system. And I don't know, it was just a really powerful moment for me because I was like being thrown into this experience that was completely radically different than what I wanted, and seeing kind of like how I handled that. Like I said, I was so proud of myself, but there were many times during our fertility journey where I was not that way.
I'm 58 and I have challenges I face over other things, right? It's like I've had great sleep my whole life and I went into menopause really easily. And then I'm having this late kind of post-menopause sleep challenge. And I'm like, I know all the things. I help other women with all the things. And yet I'm having the challenge and, you know, just exploring the things I can do. And I think what's really important is something that you said earlier, and I said in a different way, which is we try all the things and then we reach a point where we say we've tried all the things. But I think that also is really powerful. Like for me as a home birth, I mean, midwife, certainly if there was ever a complication brewing, I would go to the hospital. But when things just weren't moving along, right, like a mom isn't progressing and she's somebody who, that value system of the home birth is really important to her and giving it her all is really important to her. I think doing all the things that you can within reason has value, because at the end of the day, somebody can say, I did all the things and this is still what I needed. And you can kind of rest assured in that. And a lot of people who come to me for various health concerns, it's like, okay, I have a woman I'm working with right now, and she came into natural things a lot later in life, and she's in her mid-40s, and she has, I'm telling you, like the period pain from hell, and she's had it since she was a teenager. Nobody in her whole life ever mentioned the fact, she's mid-40s until I did, that she possibly had endometriosis or adenomyosis, right? Like obvious to us.
Yeah.
And she has tried, we've been working together for about a year and we've tried a lot of things. And she had previously been on pain meds and you know, both over-the-counter and prescription pain meds. And it just didn't even really help it. She didn't want to be on those. And finally, I was like, you know, you don't have to suffer. Like, we've tried all the things and your pain is so much better, but you're still suffering. Like, your life part of the month is always dictated by this. And then the other parts of the month, you're uncomfortable. And it's like, this is a great time to have laparoscopic surgery and have these adhesions removed. And, you know, you just get to a point where, like, if this is taking over your life or just so negatively impacting you and we have all these beautiful choices, why get stuck in one part of the story when we, like, part of choice is that we have all this gamut of tools that we can choose from. And that's empowerment to me.
Yeah, that is empowerment. I love that. That's so great.
Yeah. I had a mama once who had, she was planning a home birth with me and she had trauma. She had been, trigger warning, she had sexual trauma as a 9-year-old till she was 15, and then she left home. And when she went into labor, and we, you know, we did a lot of work around it during the pregnancy, but when she went into labor, those contractions for her just were so triggering, like so triggering. And I said to her, you know, you have a choice to actually not experience this sensation. Mm-hmm. And if not experiencing this sensation is more empowering to you, mm-hmm. let's do that. And we did. We went to the hospital. She got an epidural when she was dilated enough. We worked with the hospital. I was like, she really doesn't want any men in the room. Mm-hmm. They got an actual on-call surgeon if she needed one who was a woman. They were like, the anesthesiologist is a man. We can't do anything about that. We talked it through. But she had a really empowered birth experience, choosing not to experience something that was a previous source of suffering and trigger for her in her body, right? Pain. So, pain and not having the choice. So I like to think about all the tools.
Yeah. And it sounds like just helping women connect more with themselves and tuning out, you know, the external noise, because
yes.
it might be your friend who feels more empowered having a home birth, but you feel more empowered, you know, having intervention or whatever. And it's more checking in with yourself.
We birth best where we feel the safest. Yeah. That is unquestionable to me. And I have seen that play out in, you know, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, so I can share all the wonderful home birth stories that were incredible. And then I can share a story of a woman who was the daughter of an OB-GYN, and the entire pregnancy, her dad was like, the safest place to have the baby in the hospital. You're never going to have this baby at home. She got pretty far in labor, but she just got to a point where she was like, this isn't happening. She got really stuck for a really long time. And when I said, well, what do you think about going to the hospital? She's like, well, I think the safest place to have the baby is in the hospital. And we went, and she dilated the rest of the way right when we got there. It was wild to watch, but, you know, no intervention. She just needed to be in the place that at some primal level was bred into her. And I've had lots of women whose family physician who like totally defied those family stories and cultural stories too, but it is interesting, right, to think about how some of this can unfold.
I love that. And I know that your time is so precious, but I have a couple more questions, mostly because I'm so happy to have you on the other side of this microphone. And you are a mom of four. You are a physician. You're a businesswoman. Like, if someone could go back and whisper something to you, you know, at the beginning of your journey of becoming a mom and doing all of the things, what are some of the things that you either would say to yourself or you wish someone had told you for those who are maybe in that position now?
Yeah. So one is to just really, really be gentle on myself. I mean, I was kind of that early wave of intense attachment parenting, right? So all four of my kids were born at home. I breastfed my oldest till he was four, my youngest till she was 2.5. We did family bed. I homeschooled. And it was amazing and wonderful. And also, it was a lot. Yeah. And I think that if I were to go back and have somebody whisper something in my ear, it would be to sit with me and say, which of these things are still serving you? And do you feel like you really need to do? And where can you release a little bit of it, right? Release a little, like the having to do it all and having to do it all yourself. So that would be one thing. Not judging myself through my children. So not judging my own worth and my own value and my own parenting skills and my own like womanhood on some level on who my kids are and how my kids are, but more paying attention to responding to who they are and how they are. Another one would be, particularly if you have more than one child, is every child is different. So I think in retrospect, like even though homeschooling was amazing and one of my kids is now homeschooling his kids, I have one or two daughters who probably would have really benefited from the certain aspects of being in school. So remembering to look at each child individually for what their needs are, not just as like a collective ideology of how you're raising them. I think another one for me would be to never, ever, ever feel guilty for my own self-development, whether that was writing a book or taking a course or going back to school. I struggled with so much guilt. And not only that, but I had friends who were parenting similarly. They might have been homeschooling, or they might have had their kids in the Waldorf school. But as I started to go back and get my undergraduate education, because it was a long story, but I went to college when I was 15, and then I left college at 16 to become a midwife and an herbalist. So when I went back to get my post-bac, my pre-med post-bac, and when I went to medical school, I had to realign with people who were kind of like full-time working mothers who got it and felt empowered. And even though other people who had been in that sort of homeschooling or Waldorf kind of attachment mom sphere were still very near and dear in my life, there was a judgment of like, you actually should be home with your kids. Or I remember saying to one girlfriend, like, I'm kind of tired. Like, I'm midwifing and I'm raising my kid, and I still homeschooled, and I'm, you know, doing my pre-meds. And she's like, well, maybe if you just let go of the pre-meds. Ironically, she later went back when her kids were just a little bit older and got a graduate degree in healthcare. But really not judging yourself for taking care of yourself in any way. It might not be going back to school or starting a business or doing anything like that, but just be like taking a half a day to yourself to go to yoga and get a massage or whatever it is, but not suppressing your own needs and not judging yourself. I really think that a lot of postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety has to do with how, as mothers, we're so isolated and we're so judged.
Yeah. As far as the guilt around doing it all, not taking time for yourself, whether it's professional or personal, having days to yourself, that's something you would tell yourself.
Yes. And also taking care of our relationships, taking care of our partnerships. And if we're so unable to step away from the baby or step away from the children, and we never take that date night, we're not decompressing there either. So that's something I would absolutely do. I would step back and I would trust the people around me more to, you know, whenever you start to feel comfortable, a few months old, whatever it is, even if you breastfeed before and breastfeed after, you know, you can get away for 2 hours and go have that dinner date or go see that movie, go out with your girlfriend. I think these things are so important to feed ourselves, because we can't feed everyone else from a cup that's constantly empty. We need to really replenish. And I think that's so critically important.
Oh, this is amazing. I love everything that you've shared with me. Yeah. Are there any last minute things you want to say? And if you can tell people how they can find you, work with you, you know, get all of your goodies, can you?
Yeah, I think, you know, given that we've been talking about some of the challenges and maybe even a few like kind of intense stories, I would say no matter what is happening, don't lose trust in your body. Your body isn't failing you. Your body's not a lemon. You're a beautiful human organism and life is complex. So really just keep loving yourself and keep trusting in yourself and keep listening to yourself. And when something doesn't go the way it was planned, I hope everything for everyone listening goes exactly the way you hope it to go. And if at times it doesn't, try to stay curious, try to stay generous to yourself. Mm-hmm. Where you can find me. So you can find me on Instagram at Dr. Aviva Rom, which is dr.avivarom. You can find me over on my website at avivarom.com. And you can check out my podcast on health. And then over at my website, for those of you on the pregnancy motherhood journey, I have a beautiful program that's continuing to evolve called the Mama Pathway. So it's community and courses. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's super high level childbirth education and prenatal support and support group every other week with me. It's pretty special. Awesome. Yeah, and then my books. So you can find me through my books too.
Yay. Oh, thank you so much for being on the Happy Mother podcast. I have loved this conversation and I appreciate your time so much.
Thank you for having me.
Guess what? We have a merch store. We sell amazing things like hats and shirts and sweatshirts, crop sweatshirts, glassware, water bottles, journals, bags, and they're really cool. So you should definitely check that out. Healthy as a Mother, I think, is one of the coolest brands. Healthy as a Mother, blank, we don't really say that, but so good, because we love helping women become mothers, helping women who are mothers. And it's really fun to not only have a cool saying on some of your merchandise, but it also helps spread the word so that we can continue to do this amazing work in the world. We absolutely love podcasting and it is so much effort on our part. And so every little bit of your support helps. If you want to check out some amazing merchandise or maybe buy a gift for a friend or a loved one or
get something for yourself, head to healthyasamother.com/store. Check it out. Take pictures of your merchandise. Tag us on Instagram. We would love to hear feedback on if there's other things that you would like to see in the store, because we are doing this for you. So again, head to healthyasamother.com/store to check out that merchandise. And yeah, I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you so much. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.